Hello, and welcome to the Music Teacher Coffee Talk podcast. I'm Carrie.
And I'm Tanya. We are both elementary music teachers who love to talk shop, preferably over a steaming cup of coffee. This is episode 153. Today, we are joined by Debbie O'Shea from Crescendo Music Education Podcast to talk about our favorite manipulatives in the music room. We'll also talk about our highs and lows from the teaching week, discuss some ideas in our Know Better, Do Better segment, share a Work Smarter, Not Harder teacher tip,
and in our CODA section, we'll be giving some specific recommendations of our favorite things we are enjoying in and out of the music room. So grab your beverage of choice and let's get started.
Today, we are excited to be joined by Debbie O'Shea. Debbie is an enthusiastic and experienced music educator, holding a Master's of Music Studies and a Graduate Diploma of Music Education, as well as CODI certification.
In addition to working currently as a primary music specialist for the Department of Education in Queensland, she is passionate about supporting music educators through her consulting business, Crescendo Music Education.
We will link to Debbie's full bio as well as her Crescendo Music Education website and social media links in our show notes, which can be found at musicteachercoffeetalkpodcast.com. And now here is our conversation with Debbie O'Shea. And it's time for us to share highs or lows from our teaching week. And Debbie, we would love to hear how your teaching week went and if you have a high or a low to share.
I'm so excited to be sharing a high or a low with you guys. It's so exciting.
We're so happy to have you.
Oh, it's wonderful. You know, long time listener, first time caller type thing. I have to go high because I want to paint that picture of Australia, okay? But it's a high, but it sort of links to a low. It was a full teaching week, but on Friday I got to go to a Queensland Teachers Union rep concert because I'm one of the union reps at my school, and I've got very involved in our union, which is a really amazing group, and nearly all of the teachers in Queensland State Schools are members of this union, and they've helped us dramatically with our campaign for music for every child every week, because we've seen some degrading of our campaigns and they've been just so wonderful. So it was lovely on Thursday afternoon, as much as I adore teaching, and I really do. I'm not saying it's not tiring. I'm not saying it's not tough, but I do love it. But Thursday afternoon, walking out going, tomorrow I get to go to a conference. I get to be given lunch. I get to talk to adults all day and share some different perspectives on things. So I really loved going to the Union Rep conference on Friday and connected with some fellow music advocates, but also just broader people that work for better conditions for our teachers and therefore impacting our children. So that was a high for me on Friday.
Wow, that is awesome. So monumental.
Yeah, that's such important work. We're like right in start our bargaining for our contract right now. And we have some really great music teachers who really fight the good fight on behalf of all of us in our school district. So we appreciate all of you who put in that time to do that. It's so important.
Yes. Yes. It's very important. And music once a week is, that's the least we can ask, right?
Right.
Oh, absolutely. And anyone who knows anything about education and child development, how can you deny it's that, like, it's needed. It's obvious to blind Freddy, as we would say here in Australia. It's needed, you know, it should be a no-brainer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Amen.
Okay. Well, I don't want to follow that up, Carrie. How about you?
Oh, well, I have a high, but it's just more of a general teaching high. So first grade, we've been in SOMI land. We've been SOMI-ing it up. And then I just introduced the full five-line staff to them. And they got it. And it's just like the best when you've put in all that prep work and then all of a sudden they're getting it. So we did an activity the other day where we were just on a five-line staff writing SOMI patterns, and we were using little mini erasers because you know how much we love our little mini erasers to write. We're talking about manipulatives today. So there you go. So anyways, I was like so pleased to say that all but one kiddo was writing successfully on the staff, and I was able to go and help and work with that one and give him some extra love. But for the most part, they were getting it. And man, that just feels good, right? When we teach something and they get it. So hooray.
Hooray.
And it means you've done your preparation steps so well. And that's one of the things I adore about the Kodai philosophy.
Oh, yeah.
Is that you're building that scaffolding. So by the time you get to present the concept, they have all of those understandings. Mm-hmm. So yay.
Yay. I know. Yay. All right, Tanya, what are you going to go, high or low?
I think I'm going to actually go a little bit low because it was kind of an off week. We had something special going on in the gym. We had Ninja Nation, and it's this whole thing that's set up, and the kids need to have that opportunity like a couple of times during the week. So we had a different schedule, which was, it was fine. It's just that I saw some kids a lot less than I was supposed to see this week. And then I saw other kids extra that I will see all of next week. And it was just one of those times where I had to do different lessons from what I would normally do. And it's kind of fun to explore some different things, but then I get too excited if something goes really well. And I'm like, oh, I have to put this in the rotation now. And I just kind of get off scheduling wise. But so it was not super low, but it was just hard to do something completely different this week and have kids for awkward time chunks. And but it's fine. We'll roll with it. More like a medium, not really a low, just kind of different.
A minor inconvenience.
We're very lucky that our kids got this Ninja Nation course, and it was very exciting for them. And so that's what that was about, was this week. And next week I have a second week concert. So, you know, now it's going to be a little bit more about what's happening in the music room next week. So.
So we are just so pleased to have Debbie O'Shea from Crescendo Music Education joining us today on our podcast. We've already heard a little bit from Debbie in our highs and lows, but Debbie, thank you so much for being here on our podcast. We're just thrilled to have you.
Yes.
My absolute pleasure.
We are big fans of you as well, so the feeling is mutual. So why don't you start off by telling us just a little bit more about where you are teaching currently? What's your current teaching situation like?
Okay, I work in Queensland, beautiful state in Australia, in Brisbane, in our metropolitan, in our capital city, in what's termed usually as like a leafy green suburb. It's sort of a relatively affluent suburb where I am at the moment. So I'm in a government school. We call them state schools. So I'm there full time. I'm really lucky. I have some extra music time because the school has this history of a strong music program. So I have 600 children, which is so, so much less than most music teachers have here. They generally have more like 900 in a week is the way the circuits work. Each of our states have very different systems. We have a national curriculum, but our states have very different systems. So our state schools traditionally have had, our government schools, when I say state schools, traditionally have had music teachers, and we're trained music educators. And we have traditionally 1 half-hour a week. And often teachers go on to circuits, but I'm really lucky that I've just got my one school, and I have my little ones, which is prep. So our prep are 4 to 5 year olds, first year of school, then grade one up to grade six is in primary, equivalent to your elementary, I have gathered. So those kids would all have 1 half-hour music lesson a week. And my school, I have 2 half-hours with prep to grade three, and then 1 half-hour with 4, 5, and 6. So, and it's really good. They come up at two separate times, which is so important for that spacing for practice and memory. I don't just have them for an hour block. I have for 2 half hours, which I think is much better. So I'm really pleased to be part of the state system. We, you know, must accept every child that applies. And I'm just really, I have worked in the private system. I've done all sorts of things in my career, but I love that I am in state schools because I do think state schools are great schools and a good education should be available for everyone, not just the elite. So I'm very happy that I work in a state school, at the Gap State School, it is actually, Western Brisbane.
Yeah, which goes right along with Kodai's vision of music for everyone, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I know the first time that I met you, Debbie, was at an Oak conference.
Yes.
And you know what? I can't remember which one it was.
It was at a place with M, Minneapolis?
Yeah, probably Minneapolis. Probably, yeah.
Well, I've been to America twice in my life, and they were both within a month or two of each other. I thought, I want to go to America to present. So I, the Georgia conference accepted one of my presentations and Oak did. So I flew to Georgia. Well, obviously, a few stops on the way, mm-hmm. went to Georgia, did the conference, flew home. And then a month or two later, I flew to Minneapolis, did Oak, and flew home.
Oh, my gosh.
And that's my total American experience.
Wow. Yeah.
We need you to come back.
Yes. I'd like to.
Yeah. I'm sure it was Minneapolis then.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell us how you came to the Kodai philosophy.
Oh, the short version, because I'm not good at short versions. You ask my family. You know, but I'll try and give you the short version. The short version is I was at teachers' college, so it wasn't even a degree then because it was some time ago. I'll just try and remove my wrinkles. So it was a 3-year diploma, and I did primary teaching, general classroom teaching, which is how I started my career, with a music major, and I had a subject called Kodai with Pam Burton, an amazing lady. And I just went like epiphany moment. This makes sense. Why was I not taught this way type stuff? And she co-opted me onto the Kodai committee. So I was a student representative. Can I do the maths? So what was I? 18 or 19, I joined the Kodai committee. And I did leave for a little while when my personal life became a little overwhelming, but I'm back. So from that point, I got myself trained up. That's the short story. And I have not stopped learning since. And I'm a levels presenter too. So I've worked at Summers and done that sort of thing. So up to a master's degree in Kodai philosophy. Kodai-based music education masters.
Sure.
Wonderful.
And I'm really curious, from what you know about the Kodai philosophy in America or the United States versus Australia, what kind of similarities or differences, maybe more differences, are you seeing as far as the materials that you collect there, or is your sequence different? Just have you noticed anything glaring there?
I think very, very similar. I don't know your curriculum documents. The very downside of our national curriculum, because we went from a state curriculum that was quite prescriptive. Here's some steps. I was actually the manager of the team that wrote it, right? It was amazing and useful. Then they went to a national curriculum and it became, I'm going to use the word blancmange. It's all a little bit, children will sing and play and read and write concepts that as encountered, you know, like you can almost meet the achievement standards without actually being even vaguely music literate. You know, you could work around it. There is some knowledge and skills suggested, but they're not mandated because in many schools in Australia, they do not have a music educator, so they can't mandate that they will actually teach music when there's no one actually on staff that's musically literate. So that's a bit of a problem. But we have a sequence that we tend to use in Queensland. I am gathering from my work with other lovely American people, it's actually quite similar to your sequence. And I think that a lot of our early people like Judy Johnson and Deanna Herman, who started this here, we've just turned, Kodo Australia's just turned 50, you know, so that's how long we've been here. But a lot of our initial infrastructure that we put in here and learnings came from people went to Hungary directly, and they also went to Holy Names and bought that back. So I think a lot of those sequences, and in fact, I even have from a beautiful colleague who has passed away recently, Gabrielle Emery Reese. She gave me her song file, and it's got Holy Names College, you know, on the bottom. And so a lot of, certainly all of our initial learning came sort of Hungary and Holy Names. And so I think the philosophy was birthed in a very similar way for you as for us. So I think there's a lot of similarities. I think it's evolved over time. We've added a little more Australian flavour, I guess, and not removed the American stuff, because a lot of your folk, the folk material that's in your collections, a lot of that is from the Anglo sort of folk culture that's the same as ours anyway. Sure. So I think there's a lot of similarities. I gather from listening to you two, you move faster through the concepts. Like year one, so prep, our first year, the only actual concept I teach, as in present, you know what I mean, because prep's the most important year, you're laying those foundations, is beat, and right at the end, rhythm. That's it. In grade one, tar and TT, maybe if they're feeling really confident, maybe rest at the end, and so and me maybe towards the end. So I think we move quite slowly, but it's because at most, in almost every other school, they get a half an hour a week. So, you know, drip, 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 it takes a long time. So I think that's the main difference. And the other thing we're trying to do is embed more Indigenous repertoire, but that's got a whole, that's got its own issues that comes with trying to do that. It's not as easy as saying, I'll just do that.
Sure. Yeah, we're going through that with Indigenous cultures here in the United States as well. So yeah, definitely. I'm sure it's a similar path, just with different materials, but trying to be more inclusive of all types of musics, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And we're turning 50. We're turning 50 this year as well. Oak is turning 50. This is our 50th anniversary conference. So there you go. We're on a very similar path.
We are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I know that you love to use manipulatives.
I like to play with toys.
We were going to wanted to know, what are your favorite go-to manipulatives for music? Maybe like one for ages 5 through 6 and another one for intermediate 8-year-old to 11-year-old kids.
Okay. Sort of like picking your favorite child, isn't it? Okay, I'm going to start with little ones, little ones. My absolute favorite things are puppets and soft toys. I just love them. Soft toys, you can just do. I have a huge collection, and we rock them, sing them lullabies, you know, do little Ally Galoo, wee, and with your head voice, your singing range. I just think they're so engaging, and they take the reluctant child's mind off the focus on what they're doing. Perhaps the toy is singing. The same with puppets. I love puppets. I actually have two categories of puppets. There's the puppets that only I touch and they hang in a special place and they are characters with personalities. And I've got a tub of puppets. They live in puppet land. So sometimes we go to puppet land and all of there, the everything from oven mitts that are sort of puppets. So
Oh,
they're the
yeah.
ones that the kids can get their hands on. And they're really powerful too, because especially little, slightly reluctant singers, the puppet will often sing even when the child never has.
Oh, yes.
Right. Yeah.
Yes.
So I love little ones, puppets, and soft toys. It's not the only thing I use, but favorites. I've got to pick a favorite. If we're going middle-ish, I'm going to go for felt staves and counters. I talk about them a lot, and I've actually got a whole podcast on it. So I love that they're so quick to use, easy to do some quick formative assessment of where the kids are at, what they understand. The kids love it so much more than pencil and paper, but it's important they do pencil and paper too. I'm not saying don't do that. Useful for dictation, composition. They can make a little record a composition and then play it and then just easily go, oh, I want that note low, higher and move it. Add matchsticks for stems, perfect size. So I really do love my, because that really relates back to that literacy, which is so important to me. The fun, the joy, all of that other stuff, vital. But if literacy is not at the heart, they could just have anyone, just hire an entertainer. You know, I want to be a music educator. I just happen to be an entertainer. So that one, and the older kids, I'm going to go with handballs. So handballs are the size of tennis balls, very bouncy, and our older students, actually, no, all students in primary school at this point, mine anyway, are obsessed with playing handball in the playground. So if you've got something that your 11-year-old, slightly reluctant students love, I'm going to try and bring it in somehow. And it's been hugely successful. So they play handball on little painted courts on the concrete. So I love my handballs. And in fact, there is a freebie I've just launched that's got a handball activity. So people can just get on and download it. It's a PDF and a link to a video where they'll see a really coordinated Debbie demonstrating the activity.
Can you tell
So,
us a little bit more about like an example of what you would do with that? Are they like bouncing to a
sure.
meter or a beat or what are you doing with
Well,
those?
that's the way I started. I
Yeah.
used it basically to show meter. You know, so you might go bounce, catch to reinforce the, and I certainly use them that way. In fact, I'll be doing that soon with grade two because I'm about to present 2 meter. So that'll be one of our practice activities. But I felt we need more. So I create routines with them. So I make up bouncing, catching, throwing round your legs type things. And the routines tend to reflect form, you know, because I think that's a really useful thing. Sometimes even it can reflect aspects of pitch that, you know, it might be a toss catch and it might be a phrase that does that. I mean, it doesn't always work, but sometimes it can. And I also use it for the students to develop their own routines. So, and I might say, see if you can create a routine that will show the form, the structure of this piece. So they can do that. Sometimes work by yourself with a pair in a small group and they can bounce and catch to each other. So it can be quite a creative thing as well.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, I imagine since you've been teaching a while, as Tanya and I have both been teaching a while, you probably have quite a collection of manipulatives. Like you said, it's hard to even talk about just a few. So, do you have any tips for listeners as they are collecting more and more things for organization, as well as like, you know, trying to save a few bucks. Do you make things yourselves? Do you purchase things from other places? Do you recycle goods? So organizational or purchasing tips, what do you got on either of those?
Okay. First, organizational. I have tried all sorts of things. So I'll tell you some of the things I've tried, then I'll tell you what I do now, right? Okay. My counters I used to have in film canisters. Now, are you ladies of an age to remember when we didn't have digital phones to go click, click? We actually had to put film into a camera.
Yeah, we're familiar.
Yeah, not only that, but my dad used to have a dark room and I would help him develop real pictures. I mean, photographs, you know, in a completely blacked out room because it was a hobby of his. So yes, familiar with film canisters. Love those. Hard to find now.
Right.
Yes, they are rather hard to find. So I used to have a little set of counters in there so that the staves would be felt staves. I've even had laminated cardboard staves, but the counters slide around. So anyway, I went to felt. So they're in a pile and then everyone would take a little canister. But then there were some lids that weren't popped on properly, so they'd spilt in the bottom of the thing. And then Mrs. O'Shea, I can't get my lid off. And then there's another kid getting the lid off with their teeth. I'm just going, this is a nightmare. What I do now, there's a tub. They're all in there. I pull the tub out and the kids come by and grab a handful, use it, put it on their felt stave, tip it back, quickly clean up the room. It is quick. It is easy. And basically I do that with everything. I know beautiful Deb Bryden. She has collected glasses cases and she has her paddle pop sticks in glasses cases and the kids love them because they're all different and they love getting a certain design and then they pack them up and put them away and that works really well for her and fab. However, mine are in a tub. I pull the tub out. Guys, go get yourself a handful and sit down. Done. Yeah. If they don't get enough, they can go back and get more. If they're silly and get too many, I just give them the evil eye and they put some back. So it's easy. So my school purchased, when we sort of went through a little renovation thing, I got these, imagine shelves, but the tubs slide in and out. And they're, if you like, I'll send you a photo.
Oh, that'd be great.
Of one. And they're brightly coloured tubs and I've labelled what's on them and you just pull the tub out. Egg maracas, pull them out, you know. So everything is in tubs. So that's my hint. Once the kids know the routines, it is easy. So that's my recommendation would be like a kiss. Keep it simple.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And as for collecting, things like the handballs, I will put that in my music budget and the school will buy them from the sports supplier. You know, I get good ones. I have a set of frisbees. I got them from sports supplier. I can talk about what I do with them later too. That's not in the course. I could just do so much on this, on manipulatives. But anyway, because I just, they're fun. What else do I do? I do scarves. Okay. Oh no, toys. I'll tell you about my toys. Now this is gold, right? Keep an eye out on your op shops. I got a whole lot of my toys because I was, I actually used to have a little more time than I do now. And I would go, I don't know, do you call them op shops? What do you call them?
Is it like a resale shop? Like yeah, somebody donates something and then?
Like, yeah, Vinnie's, the donations shops. So okay. We've got Vinnie's, we call St. Vincent de Paul, or there's Save the Children shops, you know, so they're charity shops,
sure.
Charity shops.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And we just tend to call them op shops.
Okay.
So I went into one once and they said, fill a bag with toys for $25 or something. I'm going, thank you. And I got this big bag of toys. I bought them home. They all went in the washing machine, probably a couple of loads. I have a rule. If they're not strong enough to withstand the washing machine, then they don't get to live. I'm sorry, they go in the bin. So they get washed, hung up on the clothesline, and then I take them to school. So op shops, call for donations, ask your families, do you have any teddies and soft toys that your kids have outgrown that you'd like to pass on for a new life? I also have a lot of scarves I've got that way. I asked people if they had floaty scarves, and I got so many donated.
Wow.
And they're beautiful, all different patterns. And so I call for donations, and I also use a whole lot of little toys that were used in supermarket giveaways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, I scrounge around a bit.
Yeah. Don't we all? Yeah. You had mentioned that you have a course that you are offering. I believe it's your first course. Tell us about that.
It is. And I just had to let that drop in there. Look, I am really thrilled about this course. It's a short course and it runs in April. So I'm looking over there because I'm looking at my calendar. It's four modules. So there's just one module each week, each Saturday in April. And it's called Marvelous Music Manipulatives. And even just talking to you guys, I'm thinking there is so much else that could be there, but we've just made the decision. I invited Deb Bryden, amazing Deb, amazing Alison McLeod. The three of us recorded the footage that goes with this course. It actually started as a workshop, which I had to cancel because it was just after another one of our little COVID sort of slowdowns, not exactly shut down, but, you know, and I didn't have the numbers, but I thought this is too good. So I'd been wanting to do a course, and I'd done a course about doing a course. So I thought, well, let's do a course. So it's got all of the modules have video and a handout. So it talks, each of the videos gives you an activity either based on a song, or it could be just more a literacy or a concept, but it's based on one manipulative, one song, really detailed notes that go with it. So that, I think of it almost, and you as Kodai teachers know what I mean, it's almost like it's a little lesson segment ready to go. You can say, that will work well here, plop it in. Or, oh, I could make that a little more difficult and it could pop in there, you know, or I could simplify it and pop it in there. So I guess the concept is a whole lot of little activity ideas that you can use as is or adapt.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
So if people wanted to learn more about your course or just the work that you do, your blog, your podcast, you do so much, where can they find you, Debbie?
Crescendo.com.au. So don't forget the .au because I'm down here, this end of the world. Okay. If they want to find out specifically about the course, the best way to do that is to download my new freebie. So it's on my main page, crescendo.com.au, under the picture of me. That's too big. I do have to address it, but it keeps going to the bottom. Sorry. So there's big picture of Debbie. Okay. Under that, there's some tiles of freebies. And I think it's on the edge because it's the newest one. It's called Hands-On Music Fun. And what you'll get is something, a bit of a taster of what the course is like. So it'll have, well, a bit of what the course is like. There's a link to a video of me showing the routine and really detailed notes. And it's got a little bit of additional stuff in the notes about why we should. The advantages of using manipulatives are in those notes. The additional thing that's in the course that's not in the freebie, I guess, is that we do quite a bit of verbal explanation as well as demonstration in the course. And you will hear from all three of us in the course. So if you'd sign up for that, then I'll just keep you in the loop and let you know when the card opens and when it closes and when it runs. And we'll open a special Facebook page and do all of this stuff, which I'm excited to try. So I'd love people to come in and give it a go. And also, you can find all the other things really through Crescendo. And the Crescendo Music Podcast is my podcast, and Facebook and Instagram and all the things. YouTube.
Yeah.
I have so many plans for YouTube, but that's sort of on hold at the moment too.
Yeah. And we will link to your main page in our show notes so people can go to our show notes to get to yours. So there you go.
Exactly. Yeah.
Thank you.
And it's time for our Know Better, Do Better segment. And Debbie, I know you have something for us today as far as something that can help us be more culturally sensitive, culturally relevant music educators. What have you brought for us today?
I would really like to talk about Indigenous perspectives because it's something that's really important. We've already touched on it earlier, but it's such an important thing today all over the world. But in Australia, it's even a cross-curricular priority of our Australian curriculum across every curriculum area. And our version 9, the latest version of our curriculum documents, has been released, and it's an even bigger part. So we are supposed to be in every subject embedding Indigenous perspectives. Now, I don't know any music educators who say, I don't want to do that. They all want to, but they're scared. They don't want to do the wrong thing. So I think my general advice is do the best homework that you can and try. So I'll give you an example. All right. Here in Australia, our Aboriginal people, there's over 700 language groups of our Indigenous, the mainland Australians, and we've got the Torres Strait Island people above Queensland there too. So if you're lucky enough to know a song and be singing a song from one of those language groups, you should acknowledge where it's from. So that's a fairly simple thing to do. And if someone gifts you the song to be able to use with your children, then you say who gave it to you, who gave you permission, and where they're from. So the big, big rule is to make connections with your local elders. Again, can of worms, because sometimes we can't find our local elders. We've lost so much of the Indigenous culture has been lost through no fault of their own. So sometimes that's easy to do. Sometimes it's not easy to do. Sometimes you may live on contested land and there's two groups that lay claim to the land that you're on. So I'm not saying it's not fraught with difficulty, because it is, but I think we have to try and not give up. And when you know better, I thought I was doing the right thing. I taught heads and shoulders, knees and toes, and I used Turrbal language. So my school is actually on contested land, Turrbal and Yuggera country. And I found at the Queensland State Library a list of Turrbal names and their pronunciations. So I changed heads and shoulders and I just put in the Turrbal names, and we sang it with the little kids. And I said, this is from the Turrbal people and they lived on this land for thousands of years before we came. I thought, look at me, I'm doing the right thing. Yet no, I was not. I no longer do that. And that's been pulled from the library collection, because the Aboriginal language has to be gifted to you. Nobody gave me those words. I didn't have the right to be singing those words. So I no longer do heads and shoulders in Turrbal. So I'm not saying I have the answers. I've got a few pieces of repertoire that I know I can safely use, and I think I use them correctly. But I'm constantly, you know, I think the title of Know Better, Do Better is exactly the case. As soon as you know better, you go, okay, I thought I was doing the right thing. I will fix that. And I just think that we, with the history of how our Indigenous people were treated, the least we can do is try and do the right thing now.
So now it is time to work smarter and not harder. And this is just the Debbie Show because Debbie is willing to share a fabulous teacher tip with us today. So something to make our teacher lives easier. You've already shared a few already, but what's another?
Two words, intentional collaboration. I think it can not only make your practice better, but it honestly takes so much of the workload off you to work with someone else. And of course, it's going to be Deb Bryden. I talk about her on every podcast I'm ever on. But by working together, we just do better work, but we also can get so much more done. I'll give you a specific example. We're working on starting to prepare year five, writing a three-part percussion score to go with a known song. We've been working on this same task for years now, and we refine. We go, what went well? How can we make this more aligned with the standards or whatever, and easier for the children? What did we miss in our preparation type thing? And last year I put together a little PowerPoint because I got to there and thought, I want to revise, like, what is a score? Some of them maybe haven't seen a band score, or if they're in our choirs, they've seen choral scores. But I thought, I'm going to do a PowerPoint. And I had things popping in, this is this, this is this. And we used that, went, this is so good, just to make sure that's covered. This year, Deb said, I really think we need to play a few more examples that are basically like what we're asking them to do. And we've always done that, but we usually sort of write them up quickly on the board or whatever. She said, I'll add some to our PowerPoint. So now this PowerPoint goes, do, 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 and I've done that bit. Next lesson, I'm going to do this bit. And here's these excellent examples clearly written out with all sorts of things we want to cover. Make sure you've got three different timbres, you know, and we can all grab instruments and play them. And it's ready. I'm not madly writing them on the board. And Deb has done that. And it's made my teaching better. And it saved me that work. But I did last year the first bit. It's only a really specific example, but I just think working with someone, especially if you can find someone with like-minded, similar philosophy, similar work ethic. I mean, I'm sure I don't have to tell you two that, do I?
Yeah, we do that all the time. And not just for the podcast, but for our regular teaching job, because we teach in the same district. So we're following the same curriculum and we share PowerPoints and resources back and forth all the time, right,
All the time, yes. Yeah.
But that to me has got to be the biggest work smarter tip, because it's not harder. It is just makes it a bit easier and a hell of a lot better.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it keeps you energized for your career. And this is, it's a long career when you're kind of alone, right? And this is our coda section, where we give a recommendation of something we've been enjoying in or out of the classroom. So, Debbie, what you got? What you been reading, listening to, enjoying?
One of the things that I've been doing lately that I don't know if I could live without at the moment, when I go to bed, and I have a set bedtime now because I just have to get my sleep. When I go to bed, I just read a little bit of my book. I go to the local library now because I used to buy them and then I'd try to pass them on. I hate the waste. You know, it just makes sense to me. Go to the library. I love a good whodunit. something like, I can see Carrie nodding. Tess Gerritsen is like one of my favorite ever authors, but I read all of hers ages ago. So I like a good, slightly violent whodunit. It's different. It helps switch my brain off because it's a real problem to turn off the idea factory, I guess, and all the things that have happened in the day and what's going to happen tomorrow. So I've found a few good authors lately. Candace Fox is one of the new authors I've found. I mean, not that she's new to me. So I really love a good whodunit at night before I go to sleep.
Same. So I'm going to look up those authors. That's awesome. Thank you.
Actually, Carrie, can we have a little swap of good authors? Could we do that?
Oh, right this minute.
No, not right this minute, because I'll have to look some of mine.
Do you do Goodreads, Debbie? The app
No.
Goodreads.
Oh.
Oh, you will
Debbie, we
love
have to
it, and
get you
then you
on
can.
Goodreads.
Okay, good. Yes.
You have to be
I've
our
heard of it,
Goodreads
but I.
friend.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, we can be friends, and then you can see what I've read, and I can see what you've read, and what Tanya's read, and you can see how we rate the books. And so I get recommendations based on what people like me like to read.
I have to do that. What I
Me
do is
too.
once a year, I sort of put on Facebook, "Hey people, who's a good author? I like sort of whodunits and, police and crime and a little bit gruesome is good." And then people give me recommendations. But okay, I'm going to get onto Goodreads.
Yeah, please do. And send us a friend request. That would be fun.
Please.
Okay. Oh, that was a good coda.
Yeah.
Okay. Carrie, in that vein, do you want to recommend something that you've been?
Well, sure. I mean, maybe Debbie likes it too, because this is a true crime thing. I don't know if you like true crime, Debbie, but I love true crime podcasts like so many people do. And somebody recommended this one to me. I'll be honest, I've only listened to one episode, but I really liked it. It's called Red Handed. Have you heard of Red Handed? It's very
No.
similar to My Favorite Murder, if you like My Favorite Murder, but these gals are British, so it's just My Favorite Murder with British accents and less swearing, so that's probably a good thing. At least the one that I've listened to. It was just recommended to me by somebody else who really likes true crime podcasts. So the show Red Handed, two female hosts, their names are Hannah McGuire and Saruthi Bala. I'm not sure how to pronounce her last name, but I'll link to it in the show notes, and it's just another Yet another true crime podcast, but I love female hosts. I mean, obviously, look at all of us. So, yeah, it's a good one.
I'm going to
Okay.
jump onto that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right, Tanya, what about you? Are you gonna do something crimey
I'm sorry. I am not. I mean, I'm not as it doesn't always sit well with me. I have to protect my dreams, and sometimes when I watch those things or read those things or listen to the podcast, it kind of worms its way in my head, and it's a little unsettling for me sometimes. I think, I don't know if it's my age or since having children, I'm really weak about that stuff. But so no, I'm not going to share any murdery thing, but I'm going to share a boring, I don't know, maybe boring to some, but I think quite fun for me. A little app that I have been using a lot, and it's a word game app called Gubbins. That's Gubbins. And it's very cartoony. And if you're a fan of Wordle or like crossword puzzles or those kind of things, it's just a little app where you get some tiles of some letters and you have to build words. But then you get these gubbins, and some are good gubbins that do things like add an ing where you want it or give you an s. And then you get bad gubbins that will lock up some of the letters that you can't use to turn in for a word, or that'll create a little tornado that'll blow away all of your vowels. And anyway, I know it's very cute, and it's very cartoony, and it's very word nerdy. And the music, I have to say, It's really nice. They have a little background music, and you know how usually you turn that off because it's very annoying. This is some really well done. I just have to hand it to whoever composed the music for Gubbins. It's just really, really just chill piano, trumpet, jazzy kind of thing going on while you do your little word game. And I just need a cup of coffee, and you know, I'm happy, good to go.
That sounds lovely, Tanya. Well, before we sign off with you, Debbie, thank you so much again for being with us on our podcast. We loved learning from you today.
Yes, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you both. Mwah.
We've reached the double bar line. Thank you for listening to Music Teacher Coffee Talk. Show notes can be found at musicteachercoffeetalkpodcast.com. You can connect with us on Facebook and Instagram. Just look for Music Teacher Coffee Talk.
If you enjoyed this show, please consider subscribing, rating, and leaving us a review on iTunes to help others find this podcast. And we always appreciate folks buying us a coffee, so look for that link on our show notes and on our Facebook page. Until next time, this is Tanya.
And this is Carrie wishing you happy musicking.